Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
It's Thursday night, so you know what that means. All the good shows on SCTV will start at 9 o'clock this evening. Inside Sports concludes before then, so we're all good. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight, Thursday night football. We will keep you updated. The Seahawks wearing those lime green shirts tonight. Not a huge fan of those. They will take on the Arizona Cardinals, who are having a pretty good season. They had a thrilling game earlier this year on a Sunday night with the Cardinals prevailing in overtime and the Cards coming off that dramatic Hail Mary victory over the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. The Seahawks have lost three of their last four, do not have a good defense this season, and that's really been letting them down. And then they couldn't really score a lot against the LA Rams on Sunday. Kicks off in about 15 minutes. Of course, we'll keep you updated there. Okay, just some notes here on the National Hockey League before we dive into some other stuff. And you may have seen Elliot Friedman's article today on sportsnet.ca. And here's how the article starts. He says, sometimes you need a good night's sleep to give you perspective. So with that, some thoughts on yesterday. It was not a good day. That's from Elliot Friedman. Now, we know that there was a conference call yesterday, NHL Players Association talking, and the league presenting, according to Friedman's sources, a couple of proposals. The first one asking for changes to the CBA only for the upcoming season. Deferred compensation would go to 20% instead of 10. Escrow would go to 25% instead of 25. The second proposal was for deferred compensation to be 26% for next season, and the escrow would not be touched until years 4 to 6 of the new CBA, when it would go up from 6% to either 8.5 or 9. And Friedman has a quote here from an NHL PA representative who was on the conference call, who said there were audible gaps when this was presented. And Friedman goes on to write, to understand the emotion, recognize that to the players, escrow is the dirtiest word in the dictionary. There's nothing even close. I would recommend checking out this article. And I believe Friedman's going to be on with Bob's show tomorrow. And Bob is on with me in about half an hour. So look, I've mentioned this before, that we know that the pandemic and the virus, and of course that is a big issue in society and in sports. But I do think that if ultimately there is a hang up here that could kill the season, and I think we have to recognize that is possible. I'm still pretty optimistic they'll figure it out. They have to get something in place here pretty quick if they're going to start January 1st. But they got to figure out something pretty quick. And it could be that the players aren't comfortable with more money going into escrow or deferring more salary, and that maybe could be the ultimate hangup. Now, also, if you're the employee in this situation, what the players are, 60, 50, 70% of what you would usually get is more than 100% of nothing, which is what they would get if there's no season. But this is a big development, and this is something to really keep in mind. I think this might be a bigger topic than how they are going to deal with playing during a pandemic. And I think, again, they're probably leaning towards somewhere between 48 and 60 games, depending on when they can start, probably games in home arenas, and probably a baseball style schedule where you go to a city and play two or three games. So anyway, that's the latest there that I can tell you on the National Hockey League. It's Green and Gold Grey Cup week here on Inside Sports. We've had some awesome guests so far. Adarius Bowman and Kenny Stafford were on together yesterday. Some incredible memories of the 2015 championship game. We talked to the Giz. We talked to Brian Kelly. Today we have Dave Cutler at 7:30, legendary kicker, and the coach of the 5 in a row teams, Hugh Campbell, is on after the 7 o'clock news. So that got me thinking this afternoon. And you can go vote in my Twitter poll. Follow me on Twitter at Reid Wilkins. It's R-E-I-D-W-I-L-K-I-N-S. Who is the greatest coach in Edmonton sports history? Now, I had to narrow it down to four choices. Of course, Hugh Campbell is on the list. His resume, and I'm happy to hear from you on this, by the way. Phone lines are open, 780-496-0063. That's the same number to text. You can email insidesports@630ched.com. If you want to put a name forward or go with one of the guys on the list, I am happy if you do. So try to give me a sentence or two on why. That adds a little flavor to it and adds a little bit more to the discussion. But Hugh Campbell, 6 years as coach of the Green and Gold. In the regular season, he went 70-21-5. In his six seasons, the Double E went to the Grey Cup every year. So they won the West Final every year, and they went 5-1 in Grey Cup games for a total postseason mark of 11-1. Hugh Campbell, obviously on the list. Glenn Sather, 11 years as coach of the Oilers. Coached 842 regular season games. Won 464 of them. His overall points percentage, .616. And, of course, four Stanley Cups in the playoffs, going 89-37 in the postseason. Don't forget, John Muckler was the head coach for the Oilers' fifth Stanley Cup in 1990. Claire Drake, 28 years as the U of A hockey coach, six national titles, a .695 points percentage. He was also briefly the coach of the Oilers in the World Hockey Association. And don't forget, he also coached the Golden Bears football team to the national championship in football in 1968. And I wanted to have as many choices as well, four or five choices. The other choice I put on the list, and I figured this person was going to finish last in the voting, but I figured he deserved to be on this list. And look, I think you got to think about the city's history as a whole, what things meant at the time, the lasting impact of a coach or the program that he was in charge of. And I put Percy Page on this list. And I can tell you right now, he is way behind. Like he is, even if he wins California, he's not going to have enough electoral college votes. He's only at 3.3%. But Percy Page coached the Edmonton grads from 1915 to 1940, the women's basketball team. There's a little bit of a dispute over their actual record, if you read up on it historically. But they only lost about 20 times during that long run. They did play internationally. They went 27-0 in the Olympics. Women's basketball was not a medal sport in the Olympics. It was a demonstration sport. But they still didn't lose. And they beat almost everybody they played almost all the time. And I think that Percy Page and the grads really blazed the trail for women's sports to eventually evolve into what it is now. I think they at least played a pretty significant part in that. So I put Percy Page on there as well. Hugh Campbell, Claire Drake, Percy Page, Glenn Sather. You're welcome to put other people forward. Certainly this city's been blessed with a lot of great coaches. You know, Don Horward was a guy I loved dealing with at the U of A. Bob and I still have him on our shows sometimes. Three national titles with the Bears. Terry Danilek, Lori Eisler, the volleyball coaches at the U of A, all incredible. But those were the ones I put on the list. Kevin says, I don't have Twitter, but for me, number one is Glenn Sather. Number two is a tie between Hugh Campbell and Claire Drake, 780-496-0063. It is a fun topic to debate, and we will do it tonight. Paul Sir is going to check in a couple minutes. He's with Basketball Alberta, so I can tell you who he is going to advocate for, and I'm sure Bob Stauffer will bring some interesting flavor to this discussion between 6:30 and 7. But the real cool thing is we have one of these coaches on the show tonight. As I said, Hugh Campbell is coming up at 7 o'clock. Green and Gold Grey Cup Week here on Inside Sports. There's still a lot going on. GreyCupUnite.ca. I also want to let you know that the Canadian Football Cheerleaders Alumni Organization Edmonton Chapter is having a virtual tailgate party on Sunday as part of the Edmonton Grey Cup Unite programming. Now, it is obviously going to be virtual and allow for some quote-unquote tailgating. It's a free virtual event. It'll have a Greats of the Gridiron hot stove style interview with iconic members of the Double E. I believe they got Heck Pothier, Blake Dermott, our buddy, dropping by. Mookie Mitchell, Chris Sheets is going to be involved. Margot Marin from Global. Don't forget, on Sunday, you can get tickets as well for the big 50-50 online at the it's still esks.com, the website, for the Winifred Stewart Association's Joey Moss's Memorial Fund. So you can check that out on Sunday too. So still some things to celebrate here with the Grey Cup going on. Well, not going on, but would have been going on. And as part of the virtual tailgate party, also a performance by Brett Kissel, and that'll be streamed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On the Double E Football Team's Facebook page. So anyway, just some other things to keep in mind. We're back with Paul Sir in a couple minutes. Pleased to welcome back to the show. He's the boss at Alberta Basketball. He's the managing director of 3x3 Development for Canada Basketball. It is Paul Sir. Paul, how's it going, man?
Boy, I like that title, the boss. We need to use that more often here, Reed.
Well, it just sums it up instead of saying executive director or what it is. You're the guy. You're the man in charge. That's all people need to know.
Great to be here, Reed. Thanks so much.
By the way, I'm sorry for the 35th consecutive season you were overlooked in the NBA draft yesterday.
It's a travesty and a conspiracy. I'm thinking of hiring the Trump lawyers legal team after they get done with their investigation down in the States. We got to get to the bottom of this eventually, Reed. Time's running out.
I look forward to the results of that investigation, Paul. Yeah. Okay, our fun topic tonight, greatest coach in Edmonton sports history. I put out a Twitter poll, and people can chime in with whoever they want. It's fun to talk. I've actually had a couple replies saying it's too hard to pick. But I put Percy Page on the list, and I figured he'd be fourth in the voting, and he is. But you're representing the basketball community. And maybe if some people need a reminder of his significance here. So I'll let you campaign for Percy Page here.
I am honored to be the representative for Percy Page tonight, Reed, and I appreciate the opportunity because I thought it was very wise of you to include him in that very, very prestigious group. Hey, I mean, when you're talking about Claire Drake, Glenn Sather, and Hugh Campbell, I mean, these are such legends and legends in people's lifetimes now. And I think that's Percy's biggest obstacle is people don't remember Percy Page. Very few people living today ever met Percy Page. But boy, when you look at what Page did and what the Edmonton grads, for listeners who don't know, that was a women's basketball team that competed from 1912 to 1940. And you can imagine, Reed, what the landscape was like for women playing sport at that time. And Percy Page and the grads did everything at such a high level. To say they were the best women's team in the world is almost a joke. They 502 wins and 20 losses. No team in basketball has ever even come close to that kind of record. Olympic championships, world championships, 20 losses over 18 years. Unbelievable. And Percy Page was the heart and soul of it. And he led this team of women to heights that have never been equaled and never will be equaled.
Well, I think you make a great point with the longevity, and it's unfortunate that women's sports has not advanced to where it is now at the time, but that's not the fault of the grads, that it wasn't an official Olympic sport or all that kind of stuff. And to me, why I thought he had to be on there is this wasn't a 5 or 6 year burst of brilliance where you maybe had an incredible crop of players that just dominated everybody. This went on for a couple of decades. And then that's why I thought, if you're talking about a legendary name in the city, I couldn't leave him. I couldn't leave him off, and probably elevated the stature of women's sports and put it onto the path now where we have, pro leagues and women in the Olympics and high, I think it all had to start somewhere, and you can trace some of that back, I think, to Paige and the grads.
Well, I think you can trace a lot of it. People who know women's basketball, for instance, Reed, all across the world know who the Edmonton grads were. It's an amazing story that oftentimes is overlooked right in our own midst. And so I, again, give you kudos for putting Percy in there, because what they did was absolutely remarkable. So here's a parting thought. The inventor of the game, Canadian James Naismith, his quote is, "This is the finest basketball team I've ever seen." So you've got the founder of the feast, the man who invented the game of basketball, saying that about the Edmonton grads. And I think what to call them a legend is a gross understatement. This is a transcendent team that broke barriers when people didn't even know there were barriers to be broken, and paved the way for women's sports and the progress it's made today.
Paul, well said. This is a fun discussion. Stoff's going to check in after the break, so we'll see where he goes with this. But thanks for that perspective, and I think that that reminder about Paige's influence and about the grads' influence, buddy. Thanks for checking in. We'll talk again soon, of course.
All right, Reed. Always look forward to it. Thanks so much.
That is Paul Sir. He is the boss at Alberta Basketball, and also helps with 3x3 development with Canada Basketball. And don't forget Paul's son, Steve, who we've had on the show several times in the spring. He'll be playing in a qualifying tournament for 3x3 at the Olympics. Al says, Reed, I don't have access to Twitter, but I would vote for Claire Drake, great coach and the only native Edmontonian. And Kevin said, this is a good one from Kevin, with Grey Cup week being virtual, I hope I don't have to drink virtual beer or eat virtual pizza. Kevin, you do not. I give you permission to get the real thing. Good question, though, Kevin. No such thing as a dumb question. Only dumb radio hosts. 3 minutes in, Hawks have the ball. Opening drive of the game. They're around midfield. Stauffer checks in when we get back. Impressive opening drive for the Seahawks. 12 plays, 75 yards. It took 6 minutes and 15 seconds. 25-yard touchdown pass, Russell Wilson to DK Metcalf. Extra point good. So a quick 7-0 lead for the Seahawks. Now Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals will get the ball. The kick return comes out to the 26. So they will try and reply. Three-way tie for first in the NFC West. But when you apply the tiebreakers, it goes Arizona, LA Rams, and then Seattle. I would argue that I think the Rams are the best out of those teams, especially if you look at how good they are on defense. But the Hawks have Wilson. They have a terrible defense, quite frankly. And Arizona has Kyler Murray and some pretty good weapons. And they stole one on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills with DeAndre Hopkins going up and making the grab for the Hail Mary. Brad texting in, he says, hey, Reed, what about Perry Pern from Nate? As we're discussing tonight, the greatest coach in Edmonton sports history and a man on the short list will join me in about half an hour. Hugh Campbell is going to be on the show. The names I put on my Twitter poll, Percy Page and Paul Sergis advocated for him, Glenn Sather, Hugh Campbell, and Claire Drake, as we welcome Bob Stauffer to the show. Bob, thanks for checking in, man. How are you doing?
Good, Reed. How are you?
Good. Hey, I got to ask you something here about your show tomorrow. Are you going to have Elliot on? Because that was a relatively pessimistic piece that he penned today.
It was, and it conveniently did not mention the fact that the alternative for the players is not good. And that alternative, of course, is there could be some organizations in the NHL that would just prefer not playing. So, we're all having to change things. You're still doing the show out of your house, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, like we're all having to do things a little bit differently, and there's a lot of people that are advertisers on the radio station right now that don't have the same sort of volume of dollars coming in, and they're trying to keep as many people employed as possible, and there's some real hard challenges out there, and I think it's incumbent upon the NHL and the NBA, NHLPA to work their way through it. Players need to realize they're not the NFL and they're not the NBA. The television dollars are nowhere near the same, and far more reliant upon the fans. That's a given. I know Bettman said 50% when he did a State of the Union address before the Stanley Cup Final when Tampa played Dallas. It's my personal belief it's closer to 60% in terms of how much of the actual revenue for teams is dependent upon bums being in the seats. So we'll have to work our way through it. I realize, you know, it was a pessimistic day, and I think a bit of an epiphany for some of the fans or for some of the players, Reed. And I think what happens sometimes is your support network tends to be so incredibly supportive of you. You got guys like your agents. But allow me to suggest the best agents are the ones that are real and direct with you, just like your best friends, Reed, are the ones that don't BS you. They just tell you the way it is. That's what makes them good friends. So, you know, again, I hope everybody can get things worked out from an NHL and NHLPA perspective, and I expect that they will.
Okay. Now, I just want to go back to something you said. When you said the players have to realize that maybe some teams don't want to play, are you suggesting that it's possible, because I just want you to clarify this, it's possible that the season could proceed, but with fewer than 31 teams? Like, oh,
no,
they couldn't possibly.
No. Okay, what I'm saying is that there are some owners that theoretically, if they're leveraged and they've got multiple businesses, there theoretically could be some owners that are sitting there saying, if I don't have fans, I'm going to lose, you know, if I don't play, maybe I'll only lose 30 or 35 million. But if I got to pay the players for games and I have no way to recoup the costs other than my regional TV deal and a little bit of the national TV money, maybe I end up losing 50 or 60 million. There might be some guys that sit there and say, you know what, I'm not going to be altruistic here. I prefer losing less money. That's what I'm saying, but there's not a chance, you know, if we're going to play, it's going to be all 31 teams in. It's not like there's going to be 28 of the 31 teams playing.
Well, they kind of got to get on with it. If they want to start January 1st, they are more than, so that's 11 days after the NBA is going to start. It's been more than 11 days since the NBA announced the start of their season. And the NBA a few days ago came out with their schedule format and with their playoff format and announcing what you and I have talked about possibly happening in the NHL, that they're going to release part of the schedule and then do the rest of it when it comes out. So, I'm still pretty optimistic the NHL plays. January 1st is starting to look more and more like a long shot, unless something really gathers steam in the next 5 or 6 days.
Well, you know, I talked to a couple players last night, and they were a little bit taken aback at the NHLPA meeting yesterday. And again, sometimes maybe it takes a couple days of clarity over the course of the weekend. And, but I'm with you. Like, if you're the players, either accept, like, that's the thing, Reed. You got listeners right now going to the show, and some listeners might say, Bob, the NHL agreed to a deal in the memorandum of understanding on a multi-year CBA extension. They agreed to a deal, and they should stick to the deal. But the difference is we have a CBA, and in the CBA, revenue is split 50-50, and those projections for revenue are going to be way down because what they discussed in June and July, the goalposts have moved because of COVID. And so others would sit there and say, you should only get paid for what you actually do. So if you're only going to play 48 out of 82 games, you should only be paid for 48 of those 82 games. And what the league has tried to do through some combination of escrow, change in escrow, and a change in deferral is circumvent kind of that perspective of, 48 out of 82 to get the dollars kind of match up that way. So, again, Reed, I'm still optimistic. I realize it was a tough day. And I just think that, you know, smart people look for solutions, and there's smart people on both sides, so hopefully they get it done.
Bob Stauffer checking in. Oilers now noon to 2 every day here on 630 Shed. The Cardinals punted. The Seahawks defense actually got a 3-and-out. So Seattle has the ball back, but they're now facing a third down with a 7-0 lead. Okay, Bob, Hugh Campbell's coming up at 7:05. Yeah. The 5 in a row, a golden era, and then obviously that led into the Oilers' success. But I mean, the best run ever. in the Canadian Football League. And before maybe we get into to the fun question I put out on Twitter, you're a little bit older than me, so you would have had, certainly you have more memories of those five in a row teams and more memories of Campbell as the coach.
Well, what was really interesting is when I moved into the city from our acreage, I went to Harry Ainley, and Hugh's daughter was at the school. And, you know, she was sort of friends with a bunch of guys I knew, like Greg Parks, who's no longer with us, and Willie Carey and guys like that. I thought the world of Hugh. He had a laid-back, understated style. It wasn't about him. It was about the team, and he had terrific coordinators at that time, obviously, with Don Matthews on defense and Joe Farragelli and the Eskimos on offense. And the Eskimos also had the best U.S. scout in Ray Newman, and they had the best Canadian scout in Frankie Morris. So they had a lot of things going for them. Dale Potter was a teacher of mine. He was part of that all-star linebacking core that featured Danny Kepley and Tom Towns. I see Tom around town. Saw him a couple months ago over at Allegro, City's West End. And it's just funny, right? You still see, for me, it was a bittersweet time. I was a season ticket holder at 15, 16, and 17 in those stands watching those teams play, and they were spectacular. And you thought they could win at any time, including the Grey Cup, Reed. You remember the 81 Grey Cup against Ottawa when they were on the ropes. I think they were down 20-1 at one point during that game late in the first half. So absolutely special time. No question about it. And Hugh was a huge part of it. And then I got to know Hugh a little, when he was running the Eskimos and Danny Maciocha was the head coach of the team. And he was always very fair and gracious with his time. So I will tell you a quick story, Reed. I bumped into him after he took the job down in the NFL with the Houston Oilers. And we were in an elevator at convention itself. And I looked at him and I said, "So, who's your quarterback going to be this year, Gifford Nielsen or Oliver Luck?" And he just looked at me with total shock. And as you know, Oliver Luck would later, that's Andrew Luck's dad, and Oliver Luck would later go on to be the athletic director at West Virginia. And Gifford Nielsen was out of that Brigham Young program that had guys like Jim McMahon and Steve Young and Robbie Bosco and all those guys. So special time, big fan of Hugh Campbell, big fan of the Eskimos, now the Double E team.
Well, it's been fun having these guests on this week, Bob, and thanks for dropping that Giz story into your show the other day, because that was an absolute classic. And Brian Kelly, and I want to ask you about this, that 81 game, and Dave Cutler's coming up tonight too, who kicked the game-winning field goal. They were down 20-1 to an Ottawa team that went 5-11 in the regular season in the 81 Grey Cup. And I asked Brian Kelly, so what did the coaches say at halftime, or did the players take the lead in trying to fire the guys up? And Brian Kelly said, well, it was really the players. The coaches didn't have a lot of motivational speeches for being down 19 when you were favored by 30.
Well, Dave Cutler's son, Rob Cutler, was on my football team that I played with out in Sherwood Park. I played Pee Wee football. If ever there was an aptly named team for yours truly, that was it. We were known as Consolidated Concrete. So I got to know Dave. And as you know, Dave worked in the radio business forever. So great guy, wonderful storyteller. John Cutler, the Rob's younger brother, Dave's other son, still in town doing, I think, skills in sports, was a very good picker for the Alberta Golden Bears when I was doing my first stint of Golden Bears games around 1989, 90. I think that John got there in about 90 or 91. I don't think he was there at 89 because Stephen Kozlowski, wow, this is, we're banging him off. Stephen Kozlowski is actually, through a marriage, is related to me, and he was the kicker from 85 to 89. So small world on that front.
Now, did you vote in my Twitter poll, or are you staying out for that?
Reed,
you can comment on it.
I did vote, and I think you'll be surprised as to who I selected. So why don't you give out the poll again?
Okay, so it's on my Twitter account. I think I left it open till about 8 o'clock tonight just for fun. Who is the greatest coach in Edmonton sports history? The choices I put in alphabetical order: Hugh Campbell, Claire Drake, Percy Page, Glenn Sather.
Who do you think I chose?
I think you chose Claire Drake.
I chose Glenn Sather. Claire won 6 national championships in 28 years. There was no guy better in terms of developing men than Claire Drake. And the success that Alberta has had consistently since then, and Bill Moore's replacing Claire, Rob Dom doing a very good job, 3 titles in 10 years. Bill won a couple. Claire won 6. Ian Herbers came in and won 2 in his first 3 years. I actually think, Reed, that Ian might be the best coach the U of A has ever had. Eric Thurston, by the way, won two national championships in his first 3 years as well. So they've had, but I pick Len Sather as the best coach in Edmonton history. Frankly, it was at a higher level. It's more competitive. With all due respect to the Golden Bear hockey program, they're the big dog in the West. The Oiler, what Glenn Sather accomplished, and you know, giving helping develop seven Hall of Fame players, understanding years ahead of his time that you allow people, you allow people to make mistakes and you grow with them. You don't break people down and build them up. He never did stuff like that. He defended his players when they needed it. The occasional kick in the butt, he did that. But he didn't destroy them when they made errors. And he was a major reason why that organization was as successful as it was for as long as it was. And he did his best work in Edmonton. And to me, I don't think, you know, I know he won the four cups as a head coach and Buck won one as a head coach. But the fact that the Oilers stayed as competitive as they did for as long as they did after Gretzky's departure, after Peter Pocklington sold Wayne to L.A., in large part is because of Glenn Sather. So I'm picking Glenn Sather.
And I'll put Ian on the list in about 20 years. Sound fair?
Better. He's got to win seven or eight more titles. But Ian has a chance. The alumni, I've had this debate with the alumni, and I've told them, like, they, you know, Claire and Billy are revered by that alumni. But you can make a strong argument if you look at how dominant the teams were, that Ian's teams and Rob Dom's teams were better. Just food for thought on that front.
Well, yeah, and Ian was very close to adding another championship before they won the other two. So, yeah, fair point. We remember watching that. Was it Waterloo where the shots were like 42-14 or something like that? They hit the post on the set play at the end.
Claire had that happen in 85 and 89. Mark Applewhite for York stole them both years. I mean, they were all over them. But I'm speaking about the domination out west. Like, there were years that Calgary was right there with U of A. Or Saskatchewan was right there at the U of A. And the last 5 years, Rob was at the U of A. That wasn't close. And Ian, my money's on Ian long term. I know they didn't win the conference last year. The goalie, two games, and you know, had a 98% shooting save percentage over two games. But back to slots. I mean, I don't, to me, it's actually quite easy because it's at the highest level. It's in the most competitive field. And they're the greatest team in the history of the NHL. I know there's people say, well, the Canadians won, you know, four in a row, 76-79, and 76-79, and then the Islanders won from 79-83, or 79-80-83. I don't care. They didn't win the way the Oilers did. The Oilers revolutionized the game, and they were an offensively dynamic team before the rules opened up to favor offensively dynamic teams. So I'm going with Glenn Sather all day.
All right, to wrap it up, I just got one question today for the quiz for Stauffer, but you're going to love
it. The answer is six.
Well, close.
Just kidding.
The jumping off point is a coach that was a great coach here and is maybe a favorite interview for, but well, not maybe, he is a favorite interview for both you and me. That is Don Horwood, who led the U of A basketball team to three national titles in 94, 95, and 02. Bob, who did they beat in the final in each year?
Oh, boy. Well, in 02, they beat Western.
Correct.
Okay. They lost to Brandon in 96. I'm going to say they beat Brandon in one of those 2 years, maybe in 95. And I have no clue as to who they beat in 94. And their athletes were so good, and Don did such a great job with those guys, that a couple of them got picked up by the Eskimos, Murray Cunningham and Eddie Joseph. And they targeted, I think Eddie actually was around a little bit before that, but Cunningham was definitely part of that team with Greg DeVries. So who was, I've forgotten who they beat in 94, 95. Who was it?
McMaster and then Concordia.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. Anytime you can beat a team from Hamilton or Montreal, that's a good thing. But was I right in 02 with Western Ontario?
Yeah, it was Western, and you're right. They did lose to Brandon going for the three-peat.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, people need to remember the Jerry Hemmings at Brandon. He had the Tulane pipeline on his team. He had three players kicked out of the NCAA for point shaving. That ended up on his team when they won a couple national championships in the late 1980s.
Yeah. Bob, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your insight. I look forward to your show tomorrow, especially your chat with Elliot. Is he 12:30 tomorrow?
We got Simmer on at 12:15 to talk about Dave's Drive. Elliot's on tomorrow. Speck is going to be on for the horses and horse race in Alberta. Elliot for River Cree. And the always understated Jack Michaels, my play-by-play partner. Oh. And Reed, you, sir, will be on Monday.
Oh, I look forward to it. Thanks for checking in, Bob.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
See ya. Bye-bye.
That is Bob Stauffer, Oilers Now, noon to 2 every day here on 630 Chad. Love talking to Bob. Still 7-0 Seahawks, 2.5 left in the first. Back after the break. Cowtown Bob writing in, he says, hey, Reed, your poll's incredibly difficult, but my vote would be for Hugh Campbell. Here's why. Had I the talent to play pro football for the EEs, I'm from the era that Hugh would have been my coach. In those days, coaches were tough and had a mean disposition to get players to play their best. That was not the case for Hugh Campbell. His players would openly talk about how much they loved him. He was a rare coach in those days to achieve so much by totally respecting his players. The first thing he did after one of the cup wins was to dedicate the victory to Donnie Washington, who had been killed in the offseason. A great man and a great football mind. Not surprising, the USFL and NFL also wanted his services. We were most fortunate to have him in Edmonton. That is Cowtown Bob checking in tonight. Yeah, appreciate that. That's a really good message. Hugh Campbell is coming up next on the show. Again, his record with the green and gold, 6 seasons. He went 70-21-5 in the regular season, 11-1 in the postseason. Went to the Grey Cup every year, lost the first year, and then won 5 in a row. Yeah, pretty incredible. And Dave Cutler is coming up at 7:30 tonight. Happy to hear from you. If you want to call or text 780-496-0063. First quarter just ended in Seattle. 7-0 Seahawks up on the Cardinals. We will keep you updated. Back after the news. Thanks for checking in tonight.
630 Chad Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 Chad.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.